Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Everything starts with a design. Art, fashion, architecture, just about everything. Wouldn't you like to know more about what inspired the designer and why they designed something as they did? Welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa. We'll speak to some of the most renowned names in the field of design, along with Ann and Eleanor's comments and flair. Let's get started. Here's Ann and Eleanor.
Hello, and welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design. I'm Ann Asher.
And I'm Eleanor Schrader Schappa. Ann and I are going to be on a little hiatus for a while so we can plan all sorts of new things for our listeners. But before we go, we want to introduce our dear friend, Brett Parsons, who's going to be our guest today. Ann, why don't you introduce him?
Today, we are bringing back our most popular guest, Brett Parsons of Aero Architectural. For more of the knowledge and stories that Brett is so famous for, Brett is a popular real estate agent and author. He is the founder of Aero Architectural, which specializes in Los Angeles' architecturally significant neighborhoods. He is the author of Cold Court Homes, and his new book is entitled, and listen to this one, Jewel Box Houses. Doesn't that sound interesting? Brett, welcome back.
Well, with that kind of introduction, I love you both. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We love you, too.
We love you, too, very much, Brett. Well, Brett, Ann and I thought that we would follow up on the mid-century modern craze that continues to thrive around here in Los Angeles, and who better to talk to about it than you? And we thought it might be fun to have you talk about architectural and design stories, since there's a new exhibition coming up at the Getty called Overdrive, LA Constructs the Future, 1940 to 1990, and that'll be part of this year's Pacific Standard Time Modern Architecture in LA. So we thought you might take a little riff on that.
Sure, and from what I understand, that is a magnificent undertaking.
Yeah.
From the Getty. I just continually hear fantastic things about it, and I think it's a year long, isn't it?
The exhibition at the Getty is going to be just a few weeks, I believe, but we spoke with the curators on our last show,
right,
and just amazing things that these two gentlemen have put up, so we're really looking forward to that.
And it will be going on to Washington, D.C., and be on the Mall in one of the museums later on.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that exciting? Yeah.
Right, right. It probably has a one-year life overall, but it's something, from what I've been reading and the people in the know, is just extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yes,
yes,
it sounds like it.
Well, which is a perfect segue for mid-century modern. I'm going to bust some myths and put a little bit of a spin on this because it's an important concept to know the origin of. And in my business as a realtor, mid-century modern is bantered about colonial or Tudor or French. As far as style homes. And I thought it would probably be appropriate to tell your listeners where the term actually came from. Because interestingly enough, it does not fit into the vernacular of colonial, Tudor, or French, or whatever style of home you live in. Mid-century modern was actually coined because of a title of a book that was published back in 19... Yeah, it's not a house term, but it turned into a house term. It's a book that was published in 1983, so fairly recent, 30 years. That's a short amount of time in our history. And it was a very good book. It was called Mid-Century Modern, Furniture of the 1950s. And it was written by a woman. It was very well received. It was very well done. But her title stuck, Mid-Century Modern. And basically, most people feel that contemporary homes in the United States built after World War II are called mid-century modern homes. Well, they're really not. This was a term that was established in the 80s, and it stuck, and people assume that it applies to these homes that were built in the 50s. The homes that we think are mid-century modern are actually a huge grouping of different styles that everyone is lumping into one title.
Yes, they are. And this is where we depend upon people like you and me to break that down and,
sure.
and tell people exactly what these different types are.
Now, would that also go into what they are calling in Florida Hollywood Regency? I saw that advertised for a mansion for a real estate agent in Florida, and I thought, Hollywood Regency? I've never even heard that term out here, and it would look like a mansion of something that almost looked like in somewhat of a neoclassical style, but I couldn't understand where that came from. Now, would that be part of this whole thing?
Well, actually not, and interestingly enough, I think you had her on as a guest. Where Hollywood Regency came from is Paul Williams, remarkable a classic architect who's simply revered, and he did a classical look of all styles, colonial, English, French, you name it. But with Hollywood, he resided here in Los Angeles where most of his work was. But what he did was he took these classic styles and he put a Hollywood twist on them. And he was also the gentleman responsible for the redesign of the Beverly Hills Hotel. Mm-hmm. And what he did was he took classic styles and added some flourishes and some twists and some exaggerations, hence the Hollywood Regency style. And that's kind of been coined. I think I know the house you're talking about in Florida, but it's quite ornate and quite
very
grand.
Very large and very ornate and kind of expensive.
Yes. That's Hollywood Regency. It's basically a classical home with Hollywood exaggerations.
Okay. Well, now you've – and that's not at all mid-century modern, even though it's been built very recently.
Yeah. Sure,
well,
sure.
Brett, why don't you tell us about the different styles that fit in here and maybe why the current mid-century modern craze?
Okay. Here's the scoop on that. As far as the current craze, I have a theory which I feel is probably pretty accurate, which is people that can afford a mid-century modern house are probably in their 50s. And the reason I say that is a mid-century modern home style in Los Angeles is going to be on the more expensive side. Probably you're going to be in your 50s to have amassed the income to pay for this kind of a house. So if you take a 50-year-old and go back 50 years, you're in the late 1950s and the 1960s when you were starting to see as a child all these design images,
right.
And of course,
and Leave It to Beaver and all the shows.
Well, sure, and all those, and people were seeing furniture designs and home designs that were innovative for the day in the late 50s and 60s, and these were more modern looking structures. So I'm of the opinion that one of the reasons for the craze today is this is what we were imbued with at a very early age.
Yes, that's my theory too.
Mm-hmm. And that demographic can now afford it.
Yes,
so it's
absolutely.
Comfort food, sort of.
It's comfort food.
It's like architectural macaroni and cheese.
Right, okay,
yeah.
Very well put.
And there's nostalgia for that period. So that's the era that you and I grew up in, and there's a nostalgia for what we consider the simplicity of childhood.
Exactly.
Yes.
This is what we were exposed to. Now, to take a big step forward, why did this style emerge? It's very easy. After World War II, America had been victorious in the war, obviously. We came back and we wanted to exploit that win, so to speak, in everything. Everything got bigger. We moved out to the suburbs. Our cars got bigger. Our foods changed. For example, cake mixes were developed during World War II, so that women in the day who were mainly the cooks, they worked in factories. Therefore, cake mixes became popular because you came home and didn't have as much time to cook.
Right. Absolutely.
So the war changed everything. So after World War II, of course, that meant even our homes changed. And during World War II, all kinds of new materials and products were invented, mainly aluminum, because of the aircraft industry. And therefore, you had new aluminum sliding doors, aluminum windows, all kinds of new products that could be incorporated into a home. So we come back, we won the war, and we wanted everything new and expansive and fresh. Therefore, new architecture. And that meant incorporating all these brand new materials that were developed from World War II, not only the aluminum products, but also lots of plastics were beginning to be developed. And so those items were incorporated into our homes.
And big windows that very often were sliding doors.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. So the war effort changed everything about us in every way possible. The other thing that happened, particularly in Southern California, is when the war was over, we suddenly had all these returning GIs needing a place to live.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The San Fernando Valley was simply a patchwork quilt of 10-acre, you know, vegetable and fruit tree, you know, mini ranchettes for people. But after World War II, those were all subdivided into great tract divisions because we had to house our returning GIs.
And that was replicated in many parts of the country.
Yeah, exactly.
11 towns in the east and all over this happened.
Exactly, because we suddenly had to house our returning soldiers. Well, in Los Angeles, that meant also building higher up in the hills where we had not been yet, because when Los Angeles was founded, we took all the nice flat spots, you know, in our communities to build our homes. But after World War II, those flat spots had been taken, so we had to go further up in the hills, which meant more innovative building and more innovative products in order to build these homes up in the hills.
Many of them are cliffhangers, too.
Exactly. And unknowingly, you gave me the perfect segue, because that meant we could incorporate steel into our homes so that we could build these structures up in the hills safely.
Yes.
Right, because there's floods, fire damage, slippage of land, mudslides, all kinds of things that are common occurrences up in the hills.
Exactly, but with steel construction, you mitigated a lot of that, and you could be more innovative.
Right.
And also, Los Angeles is built up around a car culture as well, which fit right in with the mid-century modern aesthetic.
Oh, of course, because you know, as our communities you know, spread out more and more, you know, we relied on that automobile, and it was after World War II, of course, that the automobile became more integrated with our homes. For example, you can almost determine a home pre and post World War II by where the garage is on the property. Prior to World War II, it was tucked in the back.
Yeah.
After World War
II,
smack out in front.
Yes,
absolutely. The big change, right.
Well, this is so fascinating, Brett, and we want to hear more about it. So everybody, please stay tuned, and we're going to be back in just a few minutes with our guest, Brett Parsons, who is telling us going to be telling us more of his timely thoughts on mid-century modern design.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by The Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com.
Do you find yourself tearing pictures of rooms out of magazines? Do you watch certain movies and TV programs because of the homes they show? Are Sundays reserved for open houses? Then you are a home dreamer, and someday you will build or renovate your dream home. Steve Klipp has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the Dream Home Game. His show, Winning the Dream Home Race, can be heard every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Let Steve Klipp help save you money and make you a winner.
We all face some economic uncertainty in our life. What makes the difference is how we take command of that and survive. Tune in to Strategies for Financial Survival with host Michael Figueroa. Michael has been up and down the road to success several times, and along with his guests, will share the skills of survival. By assessing your strengths and skills and applying them to your future, you can make it through tough times, regardless of your field. Listen every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. We all face some economic uncertainty in our life. What makes the difference is how we take command of that and survive. Tune in to Strategies for Financial Survival with host Michael Figueroa. Michael has been up and down the road to success several times, and along with his guests, will share the skills of survival. By assessing your strengths and skills and applying them to your future, you can make it through tough times, regardless of your field. Listen every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit DishingTheDirtOnDesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to our show with our guest real estate agent extraordinaire, Brett Parsons. We're talking about mid-century modern design. Brett, what goes into constructing a mid-century modern home, and why do some feel so cold and yet others have warmth?
I get asked that a lot, and it's almost as if when you walk into these structures, you feel warm or cold almost instantly. But let's talk first about the construction aspect. Mid-century modern, as most people intuit it when they hear that term, it's normally a one-story house, although it doesn't have to be, but oftentimes it is. It's often long and expansive. There's a great deal of glass. Mm-hmm. And the reason there's a great deal of glass is because it's been supported with some kind of steel or metal construction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you can have broader expanses of glass. Because, you know, glass is very heavy and it needs to be supported
right.
by steel. You know, look at our skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Steel
mm-hmm.
and glass are a perfect complement. But with homes, they can be more expansive that way. They're going to be usually low appearing to the ground. They're going to be very long. They're going to basically be large volumes of space. And oftentimes skylights. Mid-century modern is often about light.
Mm-hmm. And, very and, major point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Particularly in California, where light is an integral part of our topography, our state, our attitudes and whatnot. And oftentimes you'll hear artists talk about the wonderful California light, as opposed to, you know, working in an apartment in New York City and then you come out to Los Angeles, the differences are absolutely dramatic. So with these homes, the mid-century modern style and all the glass, the outside is just as important as the inside, meaning the landscape. That is often a very critical part of the success of a mid-century modern style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got different construction techniques, and you also have to be very precise. With traditional home building and plaster walls and wood moldings and whatnot, there's more room for error. However, with these contemporary style homes and the hardness of the materials, you know, steel and cement and whatnot, you really can't mold those materials with your hands into what you need. There's a precision in constructing them, and because of that, things tend to be very precise, very exacting, and if something's off, it's a real problem. Oftentimes, you know, with a beautiful colonial house, you can usually cover up a problem with some beautiful molding. That's not going to happen in a mid-century modern. And the other thing I've noticed about the mid-century moderns is you also need privacy. And you have got to take into account your drapery or your window covering. Otherwise, you know, your whole lifestyle is going to be shown to the world 24 hours a day. And because of that, you've got to build in certain aspects of within the construction, you know, room for drapes and roller blinds and all those kinds of things. But how do you actually attach a roller blind with screws into a steel frame?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You've got to look at all these aspects. It's very much like assembling a car, but, you know, a very large car. And you've got to think of things before you actually do the construction. So there's a precision to it. They're very tricky. They're much more difficult. Your contractors need to be very well versed in the creation, basically, of a steel and glass house.
And Brett, I've heard them called martini houses too. Mm-hmm. Have you heard this?
Sure, sure.
1960s. doing the twist, little short haircut, crop tops.
And of course, particularly now with the TV series Mad Men, that's propelling, you know, that's propelling that image.
Exactly, exactly. That's what the road I was hoping that you'd go down is.
But before the war, we were all proper little people in our proper little homes doing proper little things. And then after World War II, we wanted to experience, very different aspects of life. And because of that, the change in architecture and clothing and attitudes and whatnot, you know, any kinds of these slick new things were a real turn on.
Well, I think that you really hit something when you said slick new things, because there was like a curtain came down and it was a turn away from the old looks and go to something entirely new.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened, because it was modern homes and it was modern furnishings to go into the homes.
Right.
And it was a difference in clothing. And there was lack of embellishment, which had been a hallmark of all different kinds of architectural style before, and fashion very often as well. So it changed. It was almost not crafty like previous movements had been, but it was a straight delineation.
Mm-hmm.
And there were many reasons why it was a straight delineation. One of it was economic. These things were literally thrown up. I know you've talked about steel and glass because you're talking about a Truesdale home and a high end. But when you talk about the tracks that were built one after the other, in California they weren't even built with a foundation or anything or even a sub-basement. I mean, it was just a slab and thrown up in wood frame and really thrown mm-hmm. together. And that was because they had to build very quickly and they had to get them out for a very good price. So all these economic things and style things followed.
Right. And you annoyingly gave me the perfect segue number two, Anne. you're absolutely flawless at that today. There was a man named Joseph Eichler,
yes.
who was a prolific architect who created what most people call today the Eichler home, and that is exactly what you just described. It was basically a modern house for a working man, and it was a cement slab foundation, so there was no crawl space.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very, very fast post and beam construction on top of that slab with lots of glass and post and beam, and no crawl space in an attic. And they could be thrown up very, very quickly. They were very dramatic looking. They were the exact opposite of what a colonial was and represented. And they sold like crazy. And there are Eichler tracks all over the place. In California, they mm-hmm. are particularly outside San Francisco in Palo Alto,
mm-hmm.
and even Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley out near Chatsworth. We've got great tracks of Eichler homes.
Right.
And
he
built thousands. And it was an affordable, wonderfully dramatic new look that just turned people's heads around.
Right.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, Brett, as an historian and for Anne as a designer, we'd like to hear your take on what goes into furnishing a mid-century modern.
Well, that's where I have a lot of criticism. You know, here we can add some controversy to the show. But what I see happening is you've got a population that is enamored with this look, but not skilled in how to furnish it properly.
Right.
And I'm not talking about just an aesthetic look, but they don't really think in terms of how they're going to live in their home. They want something, they want a great big punctuation mark in their lifestyle to tell the world, look, I'm chic, I'm hip, look how I live. But they don't tend to think in terms of how they really function in the home. And what they do is they go down to, for example, Design Within Reach, and they'll buy classic style or classic modern pieces, and then fill their house with that. Well, the problem is, you know, great homes are all about balance and scale,
right.
and
mm-hmm.
and design, a little bit of the past, you know, some of the future, some of the present. And what happens is these homes get filled up with all this tubular furniture that's rather austere and rather cold. And what they don't think about it, it also sounds cold because it sounds hollow and it scrapes mm-hmm. and it doesn't, there's no warmth to it. They are wonderful pieces, but they don't get balanced out.
Right. And they don't have a good design scheme. Very little use of color, well put together. And so one looks like the other. You go from place to place to place. You see the same things just for different price ranges. And the most expensive ones, you have to really know they're really expensive.
Right.
Because the junk can be right next to it, and people that suffices. Mm-hmm. So it all depends upon what you want. But what it is we've turned into a vanilla world with these homes. Yeah. It all kind of looks kind of like it's all generic from place to place, magazine to magazine. Mm-hmm. And there's not much excitement in the design field.
Well, that's just it, because you've got a younger consumer that is simply buying signature pieces that they, quote-unquote, should buy. And then they put them in these homes that are cold to begin with, because you oftentimes have cement floors and glass walls, wonderful materials, but you need to balance that off with warm pieces and warm woods and whatnot, and proper carpeting. And I'm not talking Persian rugs, but proper wall coverings to abate the sound issues. So you can have these homes look magnificent in magazine spreads, but as far as living in them, it's interesting. Lots of these couples will end up staying in their bedrooms where it's nice and warm and comfortable, and they'll do more of their living there.
We see that all the time.
Mm-hmm. They do more living in the bedroom than they do the living room.
And as somebody who prefers to decorate her home like a Turkish bath, that kind of hurts my heart sometimes. Well, Brett, it's time to take a break, so we'll be back in just a few minutes with our guest, Brett Parsons, who will tell us more of his timely thoughts on mid-century modern design.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by The Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com.
We some hard hitters. Hard-hitting radio is a new kind of sports and entertainment show. Your hosts are NFL veterans Mark McMillan and co-host Byron Evans. It's an hour of hater-free radio every week. You'll hear interviews with top athletes, celebrities, coaches, and fans. It's humor, hits, and conversation. Hard-hitting radio is on with McMillan and Evans. Listen Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Network.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
We all want to be happy, but consider that conventional thinking is what got us where we are now. The good news is there's so much more to know that can give us a new and higher perspective. Tune in to A New View of Life with host Kathy Kirk as we unlock the conversational gridlock in America by exploring new ideas and new information on every aspect of life which is needed to move us not just forward, but upward. A New View of Life airs live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design. Today we are talking about the mid-century modern period and why it has had such an extensive comeback with our guest, Brett Parsons, the famous author of the book Colcourt Home and Jewelbox Houses.
Brett, could you talk a little bit about some of the differences you see between modern and contemporary architecture?
Sure, and I'm glad you brought that up, because those terms are not interchangeable.
Right.
Yet most people treat them as the same word. Here's the easiest way to remember, and I don't want historians and scholars calling me, so I'm going to preface this by saying that this is an overall umbrella general definition. There are more specifics to what I'm saying, but this isn't the appropriate time to go into every little aspect.
Send it to me.
Yeah, enough after after a while. Okay. There is a very specific difference between modern homes and contemporary homes. Contemporary homes are those homes that are built at the moment using current materials.
Right.
That's it. That's as tricky as that definition gets.
Right.
I'm sure if you conjure up a 1970s house sheathed in diagonally placed redwood on the exterior, you'll probably understand what I mean. That was contemporary at that moment.
At that moment. So
okay.
We could go back to the Art Deco era, and that was contemporary. We could go back to the Belle Epoque era, and that's contemporary at the time it's being built.
At that moment in time. Contemporary, if you can basically figure out what decade it was built in, it was first built in, first constructed.
Right.
Then that's, believe it or not, it's contemporary.
Right.
We'd call it colonial today,
yes.
But when colonial was first built, very, very first built, that was contemporary.
Right.
So with contemporary, you can put a decade on it.
That's right.
With modern, you can't. And the best modern example, and contemporary and modern are two distinct architectural styles.
Mm-hmm.
With modern, if you think of Frank Lloyd Wright's Falling Water in Pennsylvania, you'll never be able to put a decade on that house.
Right.
Now, if you read the history books and whatnot, of course you can date it.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you've never seen it before in your life, you are not going to be able to put the decade on it that house was constructed.
So would
That's
you say,
modern. Rick,
that it means that it always fits?
Yes.
Always fits?
With modern, you'll never be able to put a date on it. It'll always look fresh and new.
Timeless.
Yes. Yeah, timeless. That's the best. Thank you, Eleanor.
Yes.
That's the best word. It's timeless because you can't date it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Brett, you are always so good about finding dirt on television and the shows. And we would love to hear all about what you have to say about some of the television shows in
sure.
which you'll find mid-century modern.
Well, first of all, I mentioned Mad Men earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Mad Men is a recreation of those eras, and I think that's just a collective television show of our psyches at the moment, because we're zeroed into those eras. Some are going to be modern, some are going to be contemporary, some are going to be mid-century modern. They've mixed it all up to create an image.
Right.
However, the one as a realtor and an architecture lover, the house that everybody brings up is the Brady Bunch house.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular series from 1968 to 1974, and everybody knows that house. And for those of you listening out there, the house really does exist. It's in Studio City, a nice suburb of Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley. So the house does exist. People will refer to that as a mid-century modern, and it couldn't be anything further than that.
Right.
The Brady Bunch house is a split-level ranch house.
Mm-hmm.
No mid-century modern to it at all. It was those homes were developed by contractors and developers to add some flourishes to once one-story ranch houses. So they made a split level, which didn't cost that much more to add some elegance to these homes. Basically, you were a step up. With these split-level homes, they're neither fish nor fowl. They're not one-level homes. They're not two-level homes.
Right.
They're right in the middle. And, of course, they don't cost as much as a fancy two-level house. So you get a lot of dramatic elements with a split level. And, of course, in California, the ranch house is prevalent. So they basically just took a ranch house, cut it in two, and made it fancy, and were able to charge more. But the Brady Bunch house, there's not one mid-century modern aspect to that house. So I'm sorry to bust that bubble, people, but it just doesn't fit.
Well, that also speaks to the warmth of the houses of Cliff May,
yes.
who's the father of that style of house.
Oh, the father of the ranch house.
Yes.
I mean, he built thousands of Cliff May homes have been built. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us about some more television shows or movies.
Well, what about Columbo? That's one of your most famous lectures.
Well,
Lieutenant Columbo, the great detective.
Well, on Columbo, of course, you know, every murderer had, you know, lived in a magnificent mansion. And at the time in the early 70s, they had two men that went out and searched for these homes for the TV series. There weren't that many modern homes that were used in the series. However, one modern structure that featured prominently in one of the murder mysteries was the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh.
And even though that's not a home, although ironically it's the home of the Hollywood Bowl,
right.
But it is a modern piece of architecture because you will never be able to put a date on it.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Frank Lloyd Wright's son, Lloyd Wright, designed the sphinxes that sit in front of the Hollywood Bowl today as you come down Highland Boulevard. But that is a modern structure, so think of it in your mind. I know many of you listeners have been to the Hollywood Bowl, but you cannot possibly put a date on that architecture,
right.
Hence it being modern.
It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. And if people around the country or the world are listening to us, when you come to Los Angeles, if it's the time of year when Hollywood Bowl is open, you must go. It is a wonderful outdoor amphitheater that was built into a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
They carved it out so they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is fabulous. You go there in the summer or nice times of the year, and you have your picnic, and then you listen to the concerts, whatever they are. They can be anything from rock and roll to Broadway shows, classical music, great entertainers. It's a ball, and it's fabulous, and you all should take advantage of it if you ever come here.
Sure. Probably one of the nicest offerings Los Angeles has.
I think so. Yeah.
Without a doubt, yeah.
One of my favorite shows of the mid-century modern era was Leave It to Beaver, and I think maybe because my brother thought he was Eddie Haskell. So do you have a particular television show from your childhood that you like?
Well, for me, it would have been I Love Lucy. And
oh, yes.
In my era, I would have watched the reruns. And, of course, my favorite I Love Lucy episodes were those that were when the show had moved to Connecticut.
Right.
Because the architect that I wrote the book about did those interiors.
Right, right.
So that was very appealing to me. But what's interesting about that is at the time, you know, America still held on to those traditional values
mm-hmm.
with those TV shows and that architecture. But meanwhile, these more contemporary modern structures were just about ready to pop from beneath the surface. I think, you know, we were holding on to the past, but, you know, all those styles quickly fell away, you know, later on in the 60s and 70s as all these new movements began to take root.
Right, right. Well, Brett, we're going to be back in just a few minutes, and we'll talk more about some mid-century modern design, so we want to hear more from you. So stay tuned.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at VoiceAmericaTRN.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com.
The incidence of autism has increased at an alarming rate. Approximately 1 in 150 children are affected by autism, giving autism the undesired ranking as the most prevalent childhood developmental disorder in the U.S. 67 children will be diagnosed today. That is nearly one child every 20 minutes. Autism One, a conversation of hope, brought to you by Enzymedica, hosted by Terry Aranga, illuminates how right now there is more reason than ever for individuals with autism spectrum disorders and their families to have the best hope for the brightest future. Autism is treatable, and given appropriate therapies, children are recovering. With well-known researchers and doctors, members of Congress, and expert service providers from a wide range of disciplines, Terry offers interviews and insights highlighting the progress in areas related to autism spectrum disorders such as biomedical research and treatment, communication, education, and behavioral modalities, sociological and philosophical issues, and legislative advocacy and insurance concerns. Autism One, a conversation of hope, broadcasts each Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. On the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel, Autism One, a conversation of hope. Through education and conversation, there is hope.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design, and we're discussing mid-century modern design with our beloved guest and friend, Brett Parsons.
Brett, tell us, where do you see the new trends going? The mid-century modern, generic term that applies to so much, has lasted a very long time, an unusually long time in design, especially for a modern concept where they, like fashion, they usually keep trying to change them. But yet more and more people come into the field knocking them out, the same things again and again and again. And as I said before, it's like vanilla. You see it everywhere at all different price points. What do you see happening in the future?
Well, first of all, any style of architecture also relates to fashion. I think when we have a change in a culture, we're going to see it first in the music, then we see it in clothing, then we see it in architecture. And the reason for that is we'll see the music first because there are no barriers to entry cost-wise. Anybody can make music for no money whatsoever. It takes more money to buy fashion, therefore that will be affected second. Secondly, and then it takes more money, the most money, to change the architecture.
Right.
So that's usually the progression of a change. Right now, I think with mid-century modern, there's a couple of things going on. It's very fashionable, first of all, because I think we're in that particular cycle. I don't know when it will change, but I think we're very much still in it. I think the reason that it's so popular is because of all the magazines that we have today. You know, 50 years ago, you had House Beautiful and House and Garden, and that was it. Architectural Digest was a professional trade magazine that few knew about. So you basically had two magazines out there for the world to see their design ideas. Today, you probably have 20 to 30 magazines every given month, and magazines love to show you what's new. So, of course, they're going to show you the more modern pieces of furniture and homes because magazines are there to sell. And they want to show the latest and the greatest. I mean, I don't think a magazine is going to be very successful today if it only features colonial homes.
Right.
You know, as beautiful and as stunning as they are, I don't know how much of a marketplace wants to see that look. You know, on a month in a monthly magazine, most people want to see new. You know, that's why they say, you know, Newsweek or Time. They're telling you about what's going on right now. And with so many magazines out there, they're all focusing on what's new. So if you do, you know, cement floors and glass.
Wait a minute. In a way, this new has been new so long that it's stale. It isn't new anymore. It's tired.
Yeah. You are a trained professional. You're going to see that cycle before anyone else will. My opinion is we probably have a few more years with it to cycle, but your eye is so finely attuned to it that you picked up on it. I have a feeling we probably have 2 to 3 more years before the next style, whatever that is, will be emerging.
It's just interesting that it has lasted so long. But I think going back to our first segment, Brett, in that you had brought up that it's so much a part of our collective memory as baby boomers.
Right.
That it's a comfort issue. And, you know, even Architectural Digest, when it first came out, you know, with the black and white images, we saw the contemporary architecture at that time. And then also we saw so much writing about what this new modern style was from anywhere from Arts and Architecture magazine to Playboy magazine. So it's had such a long life to it. So your ideas on what might be next, Brett? Look in your crystal ball.
I'm not sure what it's going to be, other than the trends that I'm seeing. Our homes are looking more like hotels, and our hotels are looking more like homes.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
So that's a significant cycle right there. How it manifests in 5 years, I'm not certain. I do know that I think every decade works harder than the prior decade, and we have more stresses and pressures. We're looking to rejuvenate at home, hence the more spa feeling on some of these upper-end homes that, you know, when that garage door shuts and you get into your house, you can just start decompressing. And therefore, I've heard some designers refer to it as kind of that four seasons effect when you get home.
Yes, yes.
So that's going to be happening. The mid-century modern is terrific, but it's not warm and cozy and comfortable. I think we'll have that look made much, much warmer and much more comfortable. What that exact look is, I don't know, but that hard, cold aspect, I think, will be falling away to something, you know, warmer and newer.
And before we wrap up, I think it's also important to bring up how important the case study house program was to this era as well.
Oh, it was utterly remarkable. It had never been undertaken anywhere else in the world. It was post-World War II with all these new materials. We were experimenting about how we could live in new ways. And the case study houses, you know, in and of themselves, they were a terrific concept. I'm not sure how many of us would love to live in them. We love to read and visit and tour them. But to live in them on a daily basis, I'm not sure the image would match the reality.
Yeah, interesting. And I was talking with you a little bit earlier about how my uncle and my father were very involved in the whole building period of the mid-century modern. And my uncle, who was the general contractor for Case Study House Number 1, I think would just be absolutely amazed. Now, my dad was real quiet about it. You said a really wonderful comment about him, that he was as quiet as the elegance of a mid-century modern.
Yes.
And I wish I had more stories about that. But, you know, it's interesting to see how we have embraced this for so long. And we're so thankful that you gave us such great insights about this, Brett.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I'm happy to. I think any architecture of any style, whether you like it or not, it's there to expand us.
Yes.
And mid-century modern has done absolutely that. And we're going to go into a new style, whatever that is, and we'll be expanded by that.
Oh, well, Brett, you have just been so enlightening to us, and thank you for coming back to our third time.
Oh, anytime.
Oh, we have just loved it, and you always give us such a wonderful group of ideas to think about and stuff like that, and we have great responses. We really do. Thank you so much, Brett.
You're welcome. You two do a wonderful job. You obviously love what you do, and I get to love what I do, and I think that's what makes everything go around.
I think so. Well, we opened our series with Brett. We had Brett come back in the middle of our series, and so we're closing our series with Brett. And so, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Ann and I will be on hiatus for a little while so we can come up with all sorts of new ideas. So we hope that you, our listeners, will stay in touch with our Facebook page, and that's at Facebook Dishing the Dirt on Design. And so I've appreciated having the opportunity to talk with so many people in the design field, and it's been just such a joy. And I know Ann wants to say something too.
Well, I want to thank all of you people out there who've been our listeners, our loyal listeners, and to let you know how much fun we have had doing the research, going different places to come up with great ideas for shows and meet people who were very interesting to interview, such as Brett and the others who we've had on. It has all been wonderful. Eleanor and I have lots of ideas of how we can go on to make it even more interesting, but it's going to take time for us to do the research and get all these shows ready. So we're taking a hiatus to do this work, and we shall look forward to being back in touch with you. So stay tuned to Facebook. You'll be able to our Facebook page, and you will be able to get our podcast there of all the shows that we've done these 39 weeks. In addition to that, when our plans are set and we have our other work completed, you'll be the first to know, and you can join us then. Thank you so much. You've been a fantastic audience, and we've had a marvelous time getting to know you.
And I've had a marvelous time with you too, Ann. So
and
we look forward
you,
to
Eleanor,
more. And we'll bring Brett along with us
guests.
Too.
Yes.
Thank you.
If he's good.
Thank you, Brett.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Thank you again for listening this week. Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa will be back next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time for another edition of Dishing the Dirt on Design on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.